We're gonna next up. We're gonna have Ashley come on up, and I'm gonna interview him. So.
Such an accurate picture.
I saw this picture and I just thought, Ashley. That's the only thing I could think of when I saw that. I don't know why. It doesn't look like you, but it doesn't. It kind of reminds you of Ashley, doesn't it, Uncle Ashley? I don't know why. I don't know what it is about you. You look.
Because I'm mad as a hatter.
You're mad as a hatter. Although I have to say that rabbit between the two of us is a bit slimmer.
Yeah, sorry.
Does not make as hearty of a meal as the two of us might. Ash, it is superb to have you up here. As we're thinking about, you're thinking about Easter a lot about, chocolate eggs and the meaning of all this.
Yeah.
And then we kind of have this, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, which is a miraculous kind of thing. Like, I mean, it's almost like, couldn't that have almost been a magic trick, some sort of, illusion? I mean, isn't that one of the things? I mean, one of the first questions is, Paul says, if Jesus Christ does not rise from the dead, then our faith is meaningless and we don't have anything. Maybe to start with, how do we know that Jesus was really dead? Like, maybe Jesus was just unconscious. And, like, he just, like, passed out because of the exhaustion.
Yeah.
And, like, how do you know that he...
Yeah. So I guess the first thing that comes to mind, and I guess what's most compelling is... So I remember watching this documentary once about crucifixion. So not particularly about Jesus' crucifixion, but just crucifixion in general. It was a documentary that came out at the same time as some of you might have seen that movie Passion of Christ that came out a couple of years ago, or probably more than a couple of years ago.
Time flies, yeah.
Yeah, and basically, I think the Romans were experts in this method. So this method of killing someone, but torturing them before they died. Some of you might have heard of this, that the way that they designed the crucifixion where you nail into the wrists or hands and into the ankles in such an angle that you don't bleed out and to die, but also in a way where you're exacting as much pain and torture. So they'll nail the nail in the ankles in such an angle where your ankles are a bit flexed, so that the only way that you're going to be able to take a whole breath is to be able to push against that nail, which means that you get pain, obviously, because of a metal implement going through your body. But that's the only way that you're going to be able to breathe. So if you don't do that, then you're also going to die quite an agonizing death because you can't take a breath.
So this is the Romans' way of kind of really, really causing extreme pain to criminals or people they want to punish.
Yeah, and I guess that also means that the Romans knew how to make sure that someone was going to die.
Right.
So if they were such experts in this method, then they would also be experts in making sure that someone was really dead.
Yeah.
And I guess the way that they would make extra sure was that if someone was still living, because there are records that people have been crucified and they've survived for after 9 days, is that they would break the legs of the people who were being crucified.
To accelerate the process.
Which they did for the two prisoners, isn't it, that were crucified alongside Jesus. So by breaking their legs, then they couldn't push themselves up, and then they basically...
To sort of hurry up the process.
It
almost seems like, because Jesus died so fast, let's just get this over with, and we'll rush through this whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, interestingly, with Jesus, they didn't break his legs, isn't it?
No, right, they didn't break, and that fulfills the prophecy, right, where they says not one of his bones will be broken. It's interesting because I think nowadays we're not so familiar with death, we sterilize everything. But I guess in that time, the Roman time, they were very familiar with it. They would know when someone had died, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I'd heard that when they stabbed him in the side, and the blood and water flowed. Is that true? Like it separates, or?
Yeah. So that's quite interesting, I suppose, from a medical perspective.
Right.
So I think when I read up about this, so there are some animal models, so there are some animal experiments to suggest that if you're being tortured, because obviously they don't have many human experiments of people being tortured, that because of the body produces chemicals that prevents clotting. So that little time after you've been tortured and died, that your blood doesn't clot, so your blood separates from the plasma, which is the kind of clear bit, which will look like the water.
Oh, right.
So I guess that's one theory as to why blood and water.
So blood and plasma.
Blood and plasma. Right. Yeah, more accurately. Yes.
Okay, that's interesting because I'm not a doctor. I don't know these things.
Now,
okay, the other thing is sometimes they say, well, maybe the Christians, they just stole the body from the tomb. Like, isn't that possible? Like, because we know Jesus existed, we know that he was crucified, but maybe the disciples, you know, broke in at night and stole the tomb, stole the body, and that's why no one can find the body of Jesus. There's no recorded.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
I guess anything's possible, isn't it? But I guess it's, I guess the scientific bit of me wants to know whether it's probable.
Right.
And it feels as if it's improbable. So the couple of things that we have to consider would be that after Jesus died on the cross, they embalmed him in the way that they would have traditionally done it that day,
right,
which meant putting almost 100 pounds of embalming kind of liquid or gunk on him and then wrapping him up and then putting him into this tomb. And then it's recorded that he's in this tomb where there's a really heavy stone, isn't it,
that's
put in the front of it. Some say it takes, you know, up to 20 men to kind of move that stone, so it's going to be a real feat to just move away the stone to access him. And then lastly, there were guards that were on duty,
kind of guarding him. Right, because actually in the Bible they say that the priest said, oh, make sure you guard it because we don't want them to steal this body, That's like, I always think it's really funny too because it's like Peter tries to fight the guards in the garden, right? And he brings out like this kind of small knife and cuts off an ear. You get the feeling like he's not really going to take on a Roman guard and steal the body. Okay, but how do we know all of this is trustworthy? I mean, when you're saying like, okay, well, the Bible, like, if, you know, how do we know that that's really trustworthy?
Yeah. So, I guess as two things come to mind. So one was whether it would have benefited the disciples and the apostles at that time, and I guess it just didn't fit. You know, the idea of a resurrected leader or God just didn't really fit with. If you wanted to spin a narrative, you know that you were following somebody who was God, kind of thing. Mm. Yeah, and like you said, you know they were scared, so you know it wouldn't make sense that they would want to try and conjure up this story. But then I guess the second thing that I found really quite compelling was to read an account of all the apostles and how they died.
Interesting.
So everyone bar John,
and
we know about him because he wrote Revelation, and we know that he was exiled to Patmos, that actually every other apostle died a martyr's death. You know, they were either beheaded or they were crucified themselves. Right. You know, Peter was crucified upside down, or they were, you know, they died for their faith.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, you know, I guess the idea of improbability of 12, 13 men going away
all deciding that
this is worth dying for, this is worth fighting for,
if
it's all based on a lie,
seems
improbable.
I guess even to the point where they're being tortured and being, you know, crucified for some sort of, just some sort of guy. I mean, but could it have been a... Well, all right, so the other thing is, all right, so maybe as a mental health professional, you might help. Sometimes they say, well, maybe this was just a hallucination. Like, maybe they really wanted Jesus to be back, so they imagined him there. Is that, like, is there such thing as, like, a mass hallucinations?
Okay. So the first thing to do is maybe define what a hallucination is.
Okay. Thank you, doctor.
All the medical students will try and remember this. So an illusion is a misperception. So you've got something that you can see, but you're being fooled into thinking something else, kind of thing.
Okay.
So Jedediah's whole show
was
a misperception, or at least I hope it was a misperception. But a hallucination means that there's nothing there and you're seeing something. And all the, I suppose, historical commentators are pretty clear that it couldn't have been an illusion. You know, there was an empty tomb, the stone was rolled away, the guards kind of confirmed it and all that. So it could have been a hallucination. Again, it could be a possibility, but how probable is it?
Yeah.
And I guess as a mental health professional, throughout history, we have never had any recorded mass hallucinations. So we've never had a case of people all hallucinating
the same thing. Right.
And in different settings. So, you know, Jesus appeared indoors, outdoors.
Yeah, right. To a group of crowds. One person. Teaching on the shore, exactly, in the room. Yeah. So I guess that's one of the things. It's amazing because actually there's a lot of logic and reasoning and actually even science that kind of supports this. And I guess the hardest part for people to kind of come to grips with is that if he did resurrect, then actually what... What does that mean for us?
Yeah.
I mean, that's some pretty serious stuff. So then tell me, well, why do you believe Jesus rose from the dead?
Yeah, so I guess part of it is the rational understanding of everything that we've just discussed, amongst other things. So I think there is real evidence to suggest that he was Lord. He did things supernaturally.
Yeah.
But I guess it's also my own personal experience, and actually it's quite poignant because I gave my life to Jesus on Good Friday, Easter weekend.
Really?
24 years ago now, kind of thing.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Which is amazing, seeing how, I'm only 20, no.
infant baptism.
And I suppose thinking back to that weekend, I just remembered being so clear and confident that God had me in his eye and in his heart, kind of thing.
Wow.
I quite distinctly remember the service that I was at. And I hadn't been in church now for like 3 years, and I'd been invited by someone to go to this Good Friday service. And I remember what the preacher was saying. It was something along the lines of that Jesus came to earth for you, and I heard it as for me.
Wow.
You know, that he died on the cross for you, as for me. And I guess it's that personal component to it. So when I was listening to Raja's song just now, and that idea that yes, he died on the cross because he knew that this was the only way that mankind, God's creation, could come back to him and not face the consequences of their sins. That actually, it's also a very personal kind of message and a relationship with folks, isn't it? So.
That's really amazing. I just kind of want to sum up a little bit. You know, today we've been thinking a lot about illusions and what's real and what's not, and thinking about the resurrection and actually looking that there's a lot of facts to it. And there's this exchange in John chapter 20 where Jesus is talking to one of his disciples, Thomas. And well, actually, before he sees Thomas, the disciples are there and they're telling Thomas, who didn't see Jesus at the point, he's like, Thomas, you got to know Jesus is alive. And they said, we've seen the Lord. And Thomas replies, I won't believe it unless we have the nail until I see the nail wounds in my hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand to the wound in the side. In other words, I need some facts. I need some proof into this. I don't want to believe just because you said so. And then 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them, and the doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. Peace be with you. And he says to Thomas, hey, look, put your finger in my ear, look in my hand, put your hands into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe. When we come and we think about God, there's a combination of understanding the truth, some of the facts of what's been said about him, but there's also a component of don't doubt any longer. Believe. Come and know the truth. And then Thomas goes, my Lord and my God. In other words, there is so much life here. There is so much truth here. This resurrection is real. And then Jesus told him, you believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing me. In other words, there's a greater joy of saying, God, I believe you, even though I don't have a complete picture, because that's the truth about who you are. And I want to believe that. Thanks a lot, Ashley, for spending some time talking to us, talking about the resurrection. I hope that was really encouraging to everyone. Let's give him a round of applause. And as the...